Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for your regular host, David Inge. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls. And very glad you're listening. During this hour of the show, we'll talk about cameras and photography, something we like to do. Very practical show that offer you a chance to get some advice on. Our guest, Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois. He's a longtime photojournalist, worked for some time for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, and has a lot of experience as a working photographer and a photojournalist, and also teaches those subjects, and can answer a lot of questions, whether it has to do with film or digital photography, two big categories that we can tackle for you this morning. Lots of things to talk about. The most important thing is if you have questions, you can call in and we'll try to help you out. The phone number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's anywhere in Champaign County within the 217 area code, in fact. Use that number. If you're outside the 217 area code, you can use our toll-free line. That is 800-222-9455. Anytime during the show, your questions are welcome. And Brian Johnson, good morning.
Hello.
Always great to see you.
Yeah, I'm trying to break one of Jack's cameras that he brought in. So,
I brought two cameras in. They're both digital, and I love film, so I want to get that for the record. But digital cameras are so darn useful and easy to deal with. And, of course, now we have computers and laptops and everything. So processing the digital pictures is very easy. And I love working with Photoshop. Go ahead.
And there are even printers that you don't even need a computer.
That's right.
To use. I mean, either if you go to your local pharmacy, or your discount store or wherever, they have self-service kiosks. Or a lot of inkjet printers you can get. They have little screens built in. You put your card directly into the printer, and you don't even need a computer.
In fact, I bought my parents one of those because my brother gave them a digital camera for Christmas. And rather than having to deal with, how do I connect this to the computer and what kind of printer and all that
stuff.
And
what kind of software.
So you just have a...
So your parents don't have a Mac then?
No.
See,
yeah.
There you go.
All okay. right. Well, that's another subject we may take up. But, so all they have to do is pull the memory card out of the computer stick it in the printer.
Absolutely. And there it is.
Yeah, and it's even got a little screen that you can
see. One thing, though, it's kind of cool, too. Hewlett-Packard had a printer where you could, it was one of their multifunction printers, and it would print out a contact sheet, which is a sheet that has all of your pictures in thumbnail size. And it sort of had an optical character recognition system because it had a scanner, and you just put a little black dot by which pictures you wanted it to print and what size.
Yeah.
And you scan that back into the printer, and then it would print out your pictures, which I thought, that's a pretty cool way to do it, too.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's getting easier and easier. We have a caller to talk with. Why don't we include
that? Yeah, absolutely.
We can follow up on this.
Good.
I don't want to talk about my cameras, too. So we'll go first to an Urbana listener, line number one. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Brian. I shoot a Canon Rebel. I'm still using film.
Uh-huh.
And I have a niece getting married in December, so there won't be any good outside pictures.
Right.
I'm wondering about getting a reflector.
Sure. Now, tell me what kind of... Are you hoping to shoot portraits? Are you...
Well, a little bit of everything.
Okay. Okay.
I shoot usually 12, 13 rolls of film.
Uh-huh. I love using reflectors. That's one of my favorite things to do. And even in my beginning photo course, when I take portraits of everyone, I usually, whip out some kind of reflector and show them how simple it is to use a reflector and how it essentially gives you almost like another light source.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have a speed light on top of my camera, but there's no way I could afford two more to go to either side.
Right.
But I noticed that there's not only the silver reflectors, but then there's gold also.
Right. Now, here's the thing about the gold reflectors.
Okay.
I love the gold reflectors because they're cool, but what I've found is that sometimes they give you too much gold, and what they're really great for is if you have one kind of behind the person to give a little bit of hair light, that shines kind of a nice golden light, sort of a backlight. And mm-hmm. I think the gold are really great for that.
But stay with silver for the...
Well, here's the thing about silver.
Uh-huh.
Because silver sometimes will give you a reflected light that's it has more contrast.
Uh-huh.
And it's sometimes it can almost go a little bit into the blue range.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what's really awesome is they have, you know, the fold-up reflectors, those round spring-loaded ones.
Right.
Have you seen those? There are some that you can get that are called 5-in-1.
5-in-1.
Yeah, and what it is, it's a reflector that by itself has a translucent white fabric.
Okay.
But then there's a zippered cover, and
right.
On one side of the cover, it's black and silver, and then on the other side, I think it's gold and white. So it gives you a translucent reflector, a gold reflector, a silver reflector, and a white reflector. Now, the thing about the black one, what's nice, and you're thinking, you know, why have a black reflector?
Exactly.
Well, what you do with the black is you use it to cast a shadow on your subject. So if you're out in bright sun, you can block the sun on your, and this works particularly well just for head and shoulders type portraits. You block the sun so it puts your subject in shade. And then take the exposure reading off the subject. And what it does is it makes the background kind of overexposed, which can give you sort of a nice ethereal kind of overexposed light background. But the person, since they're in shade, they're a little bit more evenly lit. So that's what I'd recommend that you get is get. And
get
I think, you know, there's PhotoFlex as one of the manufacturers of lot of those, and I'm pretty sure that they have one. But, you know, it gives you all those options. They have a number of different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
The small ones are nice because you can carry them with you very easily. And they're really great for kind of head and shoulders type things. If you're going to do more, you know, three-quarter body things, you might want to get a slightly larger one.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. Well, good deal.
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering about the black one. Could I just say something about digital, though?
Sure. Uh-huh.
You know, with all these digital cameras and their low pixels, people are getting used to bad photos.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. So, it makes it easier for me because then my family is wowed by a decent photo. Not a good one, but a decent one.
Right. You know what's happening now, though, is that the cost of the higher resolution chips have come down, so that you can get like a 5-megapixel camera for, you know, $180.
Yeah, I've got a 5-megapixel Kodak, but it's not great. I know.
Right, and with some of them, you're dealing with issues of the lens and all that. But
as
I'm sure you know, it's still your talent as a photographer that really makes the difference.
Yeah, and part of it's just hoping to be there.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. Just a quick follow-up on that, we'll get to another caller, is, you know, the lens is really a big issue.
It is, particularly with the digital cameras, because the image sensor is so small that if the lens isn't really, really excellent, you're, the image is being put on that little teeny sensor, and any flaw in the lens is really going to show up. And it doesn't show up in like, oh, my God, look at that, you know,
distortion
squiggle.
Or whatever.
It's just, but that definitely is an issue.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll talk more about that and my cameras. But we have a caller waiting,
and they
take precedence over my thing. So someone in Normal next, line number two. I mean, four. Go ahead.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
I'm not really all that important. Thanks.
Oh, yes, you are. Yes, you are.
I have a question about camcorders, actually.
Sure.
I'm interested in doing some video taping. Well, it's not video taping anymore, but recording some stuff. I want to, like, maybe work on some sketch shows or maybe, you know, some a pilot for maybe an internet thing.
Sure,
And I really don't have much money at all. I'm just kind of interested in finding out, you know, what the best options are for the least amount of money. I'll just go ahead and take my answer off the air.
Okay.
On air, that is. All right, thanks.
Thanks for the question.
Yeah, great. You know, one thing that's happened lately, again, just like with the digital still cameras, the digital video cameras have come way, way down in price. Most of the digital video cameras that you can find now record, well, there are two types. There are the ones that record on a mini DV tape, and they're the ones that record on a small DVD. I am biased towards the ones that record on the tape. The ones that are recording on the DVD are compressing your video. And when you get into edit, and particularly for the last caller, he's going to want to use some sort of video editing software. I think going from the tape is going to be the best solution for that. You can get a mini DV camera now for, you know, $300, even, you know, $289 or something like that. For the kind of work that the caller wants to do, and in particular, is that the audio is going to be extremely important. So what I'd recommend that the last caller look for is a camera that has a microphone input. Most of the smaller cameras that have this input will have, it's called a mini plug, an eighth inch mini plug. And that way he can use external microphones. He can plug in a little microphone and get his actors. And there's some, you know, somewhat inexpensive wireless microphones. I mean, those, I think so, I've seen some of the less expensive ones. They're, you know, maybe reasonably expensive, $180. For someone that does audio, that's dirt cheap, you know. But that's really what he wants to look for. Now, something that's happened, Canon, which I'm a, you know, I'm biased towards Canon and everything because I use a lot of Canon stuff. On some of their lower end mini DV cameras, they had a microphone input. Well, they've removed that on all of them, and now you have to go to their, you know, kind of upper end camera, which is really unfortunate. I'm sure that most people never used it, and that's why they did it. But for the kind of things that the caller was doing, if you're doing any sort of interviews or, you know, mini documentaries or whatever, you know, that's really what you need. So that's what I'd recommend the caller look for is, you know, get the least expensive camera you can because he doesn't have much money, and look for the microphone input.
Yeah. Well, there are probably other options, but I recently saw a Sony HD, high definition mini DV camera, mini DV camera that had professional microphone inputs, XLR inputs,
right,
and it was like $1,100.
Right, and that's actually what I was going to recommend to the callers, that he think really only about high definition.
Yeah.
But when he said, you know, he really wants to keep the cost down, the mini DV cameras have amazing quality, but anymore, I think people should get only high definition because it's just really right around the corner. And, you know, most of them can play back in standard definition. but to have that recorded in high def is just, once you see high definition, you will think there's no other choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but since money was an issue.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah.
Well, we have another listener waiting, someone in Champaign, line number one, next. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. I have a card reader problem.
Okay.
And what I have is a HP computer, and it was a 98, and I updated it to XP. And then I have hooked to it a HP printer with a card reader.
Okay.
And it's a 1350. And I have a Canon PowerShot camera. And it takes the little bitty, like, one-inch square card to go in.
Right, uh-huh.
And after I download, like, two or three pictures, it freezes up and won't take the rest of them off the card.
Hmm.
And I wondered where my problem's coming from, the printer or the computer or the camera program. Have any idea?
yeah, it's a good question, and I don't know for sure now. Sometimes what it is that if there's so much data that's flowing, sometimes the computer or maybe in this case the printer isn't able to keep up with so many all at once.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a great solution, but at least in the short term, this could be it. What you could do is just download one picture at a time, you know, and then...
Yeah.
Get that one done and do the next one. And as I say, I know that's not a great solution, but at least...
Yeah, I wondered if maybe my computer is just so old that it just don't have enough oomph in it.
It it could absolutely be that it's just, you know, trying to keep up, the hard drive could be spinning, and that there's a problem with the computer and the printer that has the card reader talking to one another, and that, you know, somewhere along the communications chain, something's not able to keep up, and so there's a timeout that's happening that's just too long.
Nothing pops up except it just says that it can't read the card.
Now it could also be sometimes the memory cards do have a problem. So it could be an issue like that, too.
Is there an easy way to find this out?
Well, the one thing I was going to recommend, you can buy a separate card reader for maybe $10.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, Jack?
Right.
And I would get a separate card reader and try to plug that directly into your computer.
Okay.
And see if you can download the photos that way.
Okay.
And that way you kind of remove the whole printer part of it. I think you have a more pure connection.
Something else I could tell you is I have the same printer hooked up to a laptop, and it works great there.
Okay. Well,
does that help you any?
Yeah. I mean, it. You know, in that case, then it sounds like it could be your own computer. And, you know, maybe there's a driver that's out of date. So check to see if your printer driver for that printer is up to date.
Okay.
And see if that helps. Now, something, too, that a lot of people don't think about is that you can, with most of the cameras, you can plug the camera directly into the computer, and you don't need to take the card out and put it in a card reader. Most of them have a USB plug that you can plug into the camera and then plug into the computer.
I have all that.
Yeah,
so easier just stick the card in.
I know. but sometimes, you know, again, it's something you could try just to see, you know, plug in directly.
Okay.
Plug in directly to the camera and the computer and see if that solves anything.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Great. And good luck.
Bye.
Yeah. We're talking about computers. Any number of things that could go wrong.
I know.
So
I know.
Kind of hard to figure that
out. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And, you know, what the caller was doing was a good thing. You know, she had a laptop, so she tried it with that,
right.
So it worked there. So it's like, okay, well, seems like the printer and the card reader and the printer works. Seems like the card was working. Something about the memory cards, that's a really good thing to do. Once you download your photos to your computer, unless you're going to take your camera to friends and you want to show them pictures or whatever, it's a good idea to reformat the card. Most of the cameras will have, under the settings menu, there'll be a way to go down where it says format. Now, you can erase the card completely, and that helps. But if you reformat the card, it kind of cleans out everything.
Yeah, sort of like defragging your hard drive.
It is.
Wiping it all together.
It is. You're wiping it totally clean so that when stuff's being written back. So memory card maintenance is really important in that way.
Good. Well, we had a question. By the way, I should probably introduce our guest again. We're talking with Brian Johnson, professor of journalism at the University of Illinois in the College of Communications, of which we are a proud member. And we're talking about photography. We talk a lot about digital photography, but also film. Any questions you have are welcome. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455, and our lines are open, so feel free to join us. We did have a question off the air. Someone sent me an email basically asking about image formats. They have a nice Sony camera they really like, and takes a lot of detail. It takes JPEGs. Now, that's a particular image format, but now we're also seeing cameras that have this thing called RAW format.
Right.
And they're also TIFF formats. And I wonder if you could talk about those and explain what they are.
And most of the professional cameras have had the RAW format from the beginning.
Okay.
And it was shrouded in mystery, you know, in the early days, because most of the image programs didn't know what to do with RAW. And you had to use the camera manufacturer's special RAW processing software. What the RAW format is it is the raw image file. When you set things like white balance and all of that with your camera, the camera can record a full range of colors. And when you set the white balance, it gives you the image just with a kind of a subset of that full range of colors. If you record your image in RAW, it doesn't really apply the white balance to the thing. It gives you the full range of colors that the sensor recorded. So what's great about that is that once you take that image into your software later, you can decide where along that range is the best color selection. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's thing number one. Thing number two is that it has, you know, all the resolution that the camera can give you.
Yeah.
So you're going to get, you know, the sharpest images mm-hmm. with that. So,
but also a much bigger file size. So you can take fewer pictures.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
On a particular memory card.
Yes. The RAW file is quite a bit larger. Many of the cameras, now the professional cameras, will let you simultaneously record a RAW image and a JPEG image.
Oh.
So it's nice to have the JPEG as, you know, reference. You can quickly go through them. Mm-hmm. The thing about a JPEG image, and that's the format that most of the cameras use to record, it's a compression format. So the person who sent the email also asked about the TIFF file format.
Mm-hmm.
TIFF stands for Tagged Image File Format. And just so people know, JPEG is an acronym, too. It stands for Joint Photographic Experts Group. And they came up with a description of what a JPEG file is. Mm-hmm. The TIFF file is great because it doesn't compress the image. So what I do when I'm working on a file, I use Photoshop for my image processing. I'll bring it into Photoshop. I'll usually save it as just a Photoshop format because in Photoshop format, it will not compress the image. So it'll take that JPEG information and it won't recompress it.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the TIFF, and what the TIFF file format is great for is if you're going to take that image into a page design program, and the TIFF file format has been around forever, mm-hmm. and all of the page design programs really know what to do with it. And as I say, that also will not compress the image.
Because
mm-hmm. if you have a JPEG images, which has compressed the picture,
yeah.
And just to give a little bit of background, if you enlarge a JPEG picture really, really large, you can see that what it does is it breaks the picture up in a number of blocks,
mm-hmm.
and it defines the image in that block, and that's how it's compressing the image. Well, if you save a JPEG as a JPEG, and then you work on it some more, and you save it as a JPEG again, and you work on it some more and save it as a JPEG again, you're compressing a compressed picture. So you're compressing a compressed picture that's being compressed that you're compressing again, and pretty soon you're really going to degrade the quality.
Yeah. So when we say compression, just to put a fine point on this,
yeah.
it means throwing away information.
It means
it's applying a mathematical formula, an algorithm to a digital file,
right?
Analyzing how can we make this look as good as possible while throwing away
exactly.
bits.
That's right. And JPEG is an awesome format. And in many of the programs, when you're saving it as a JPEG, you can select the quality level.
Mm-hmm.
So if you save a JPEG at the highest quality level, which in Photoshop is a 12,
mm-hmm.
You can save it over a couple times and, you know, you're not going to notice anything. The amazing thing is with a JPEG, you can save it as a quality of 0. And if you're going to use a photo on the web, it's amazing. I mean, it shrinks
yeah.
it down so small
yeah.
and it looks awesome. But if you enlarge it, you can really see where it's, you know, done that kind of that grid system to
yeah.
take care of data.
We have another call to talk with. We're at our midpoint here. We'll go ahead and include our next caller, someone in Champaign, line number one. Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I have two quick questions mm-hmm. about using my digital camera. I have it's a Canon. I think it's called the 450. It's a 5.1 megapixel with like the 2.5-inch LCD on the back.
Right, uh-huh.
And I've been having like, I like to take pictures like in sort of low light. And so I've fooled around with a lot of the different settings, you know, the automatic presets that it comes with.
Right.
And haven't had a tremendous amount of success taking low-light photos or even, like, photos at night. So that's sort of one question. And then the other question is I have a lot of problems sometimes with it, you know, blurring the image. If I try and take an image pretty quickly and, you know, I have to move it to follow something.
Right.
And the image blurs. So those are sort of my two biggest issues with it. And I'm just wondering if, you know, it's just the camera that I can't, you know, use it to do what I want it to do, or if it's I need to, you know, get it on the correct setting.
Right. Tell me about the low light level pictures and what they're looking like.
A lot of times they'll, like I used to have a pretty nice Kodak camera, and I would just, you know, take a picture, and like when it's displaying on the LCD, it looks really good.
Right.
And with the old one I had, it took it, and the actual image looks pretty good in low light. Like it would sort of be oranged over, almost like sepia.
Right.
And with my new one, it'll display it looking sort of like that on the LCD, but then when I actually take the picture, it's just very dark, and it looks like sort of just like almost like a true image, like it's just a dark sort of, you know, it's actually what it looks like instead of sort of enhancing it a little bit.
Okay. So a couple things that I think is going on. One, your pictures are underexposed, and that's why they're looking dark like that. So it could be that if you set the ISO on the camera, you want to set the ISO higher.
Okay.
And then the other thing, that sepia tone or that kind of orange look, what that is that's a white balance thing. Now, if you like that, that's fine. But what I would do is you can usually set the white balance. A lot of the cameras have automatic white balance, and that's the default setting.
Yeah.
And they usually do pretty well with that. But if you know you're shooting indoors and you have normal incandescent bulbs, just kind of your normal light bulb type of light, what you want to do is set your white balance so it's you know, on the Canons, it has a symbol that looks like a little light bulb.
Okay.
And, yeah, so I'm looking at Jack's.
This is the same camera, by the way. I have the same exact camera that you mentioned.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's automatic white balance, and then there's the sun setting, which is daylight. There's the cloudy setting, and then it says tungsten. That's how they've labeled it. It looks like an upside-down light bulb.
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the one that's going to make the pictures look more neutral. You can, you know, when you're working with your images on the computer, you can, you know, do sepia tone, make them blue, whatever. So I would start with them being neutral.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, Jack, where's the set on this guy? So if I wanted to set that setting, do you just press the middle of it?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to do that. And on the Canons, and Jack, does your camera have this? There's a setting where it looked like a person with kind of like a sun or a moon over them, or like a star, because there's sort of a low light level setting there. But basically,
yeah, I'm pretty sure I have that.
Okay, what that's going to do is that's going to, you know, give you a slower shutter speed.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that you're talking about with the blur when you're doing a fast moving subject, what that is that if you're trying to move with the subject, you can totally do that. But what you need to do is, just shoot a lot of pictures because, you know, because if you move exactly right with your subject, the subject will look stationary. Well, not stationary exactly, but they'll be pretty sharp and not blurred, and the background will be blurred. Once we're quick going up and they're looking a little bit blurred, it's because the shutter speed's slow.
Uh-huh.
So you just need to really think about keeping the camera steady. Maybe it means, you know, leaning up against the wall. Maybe if you're at a table, like at a restaurant or something, you can put your elbows on the table.
Yeah.
And that'll definitely do it. I'm also looking at Jack's camera, which is like yours. And, you know, so it definitely does have the ISO setting. And it's just on the top. I'm going to get out of this guy here.
Yeah, what number should I set that to, do you think?
Well, when you're indoors, let's see what this is. It can go up to 400 ISO.
Okay. So I should go the higher the better, then.
Yeah, the higher the better for those indoor shots. You'll lose a little bit of image quality, but better lose a little bit of image quality because of the higher ISO rather than kind of the blurring from the camera shake.
Yeah. Okay.
Hope that helps.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome.
Okay,
thanks for the call. speaking of taking a lot of pictures and, you know, different situations and trying to get the best shot.
Right.
This other camera I brought, this is a Fuji.
Right.
It's a big body.
Right.
And it's got a big lens. It's only a 3 megapixel, but this camera actually takes better images than this 5 megapixel Canon just because of the lens, I think. But it also has a setting where you can fire bursts of pictures, like, you know, 5 per second.
Right.
Or there are different settings. So you can just hold down the shutter and it'll just take a whole bunch of images. And, you know, chances are one of those is going to turn out pretty good.
Oh, Jack, don't tell me that.
In motion, especially in motion,
right,
you know what I'm saying?
The only reason I kind of tease you a little bit about it is that that's what a lot of people think. It's like, well, I'll just take many and then I'll just choose the best one. And that's okay to do if it works.
Yeah.
But usually you're best kind of trying to time it.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to put a caveat in here because a lot of the digital cameras have shutter lag so that when you go to press the button, there's that lag. So I think actually, I'm going to take back some of my teasing.
Okay.
You probably are 100% correct that with a digital camera just mashing the button and letting it take, you know, if it can take a series of 5, that probably is a good thing, because the problem with many digital cameras, when you're trying to time it and get the peak action, you're going to miss it because of that shutter lag.
Right.
So because of the slow response time, starting out early and letting it go will, on average, probably give you the best shot. Now, if you have a camera where you press the button and it takes it instantaneously, like most of the film cameras did and most of the professional digital cameras, then you want to kind of time it and wait for the peak action. Press the shutter button the instant before it and then let it go afterwards. So maybe get, you know, that peak action shot and then, you know, the aftermath, you know, the person, if they're jumping, maybe they fall down and you get them sprawled out on the floor or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I can take your teasing, Brian. So bring it on. Bring it on.
I know that you're tough enough.
That's right. But what I was thinking is an application like in sports photography where you have a motor drive anyway. You want to take a lot of shots because you're capturing action.
Right.
And in this case, I was thinking of a situation where, you know, my kids are playing and they're jumping around and stuff like that. And in using that function, I could catch, you know, midair motion, things like that. So it's, you know, it's really fun to find.
Right. And exactly right. And, you know, with all of these cameras, they do have that shutter lag. And so absolutely, that is the best way. Now, something to remember, though, once you do that and you get, excuse me, I'm coughing here. You, once you take that range of photos, what you do then is the camera has to catch up to that.
Right.
So once you shoot your burst, you have to be prepared to wait for a few seconds while the camera records all those to the memory card.
Right. Okay. So. Well, we have a couple callers waiting. Let's talk with them. We'll go next to a Champagne listener, line number 2. Good morning. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
This is not a very technical question going a different direction. But
good.
Occasionally, for no obvious reason, a picture will come out that has these little circular, like, orbs or halos. It can be indoors, outdoors, bright light. They're just there, just randomly. Even, like, if you take 3 pictures of the same event, one might have it, another not. And I have some friends who kind of interpret that as a spiritual, mystical thing going on.
Cool.
Could I, like...
Sell the camera on eBay.
No, it's different cameras, too. I mean, you know, it just sometimes it happens.
Huh.
So I'm going to hang up, and you can tell me why it happens, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right, thanks.
Sometimes what will happen is elements that are way in the background, as they go out of focus, there's a term in photography, they're called circles of confusion. Because there are elements that are in the background that are so out of focus.
I feel that every day.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. That's how you live.
Yeah,
right? Me too sometimes.
Yeah, that's after parenting.
Yeah, that's
pretty much constant.
Yeah, I know that feeling too. So when there's an out of focus background, particularly if there's like a little light or something like that, there's another thing that can cause that. There's something that's called flare that'll come into the camera, and it's if there's a light that's just kind of on the fringe of the lens, it will kind of stream in through the lens and create kind of a flare like that. Now, the other thing that it could be, you know, maybe there's a malfunction, you know, with if it's a digital camera, it could be the sensor. If it's a film camera, it could be a light leak in the camera back that's causing that too. So if it's the image sensor, you know, there could be just something electronically not correct. If it's a film camera, you know, it could be a light leak or something like that that's causing it.
And you should sell it on eBay.
Or it could be spiritual and you can sell it and say, you know, eBay, it's the, you know, and you could have some examples of your pictures. And,
well, it's amazing what people will buy there, you know.
Yeah.
I know there was somebody who was selling an air guitar. You know, that was pretty pretty good. And I think they found a buyer, too.
It was someone was selling a Post-it note one time.
Oh, no.
Just a single Post-it note, just with nothing on it.
Wow. Too much time on their hands. Okay, we have a couple callers waiting. Let me just mention again our guest, Brian Johnson, professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in the College of Communications. We're talking about photography. Any questions you have are welcome. We do have two callers waiting and time for others, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Another Champaign listener next, line number three. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Hi, I actually have another digital camera question. I've had a digital camera that was given to me for a year, and it's a Fuji Finepix Z1.
Okay.
And I really only got around to really using it in the last few months, and I'm really enjoying it. But so once I finally figured out how to use it, I'm now using it regularly.
Right.
And I really like it because it's so small and thin, and I can take it anywhere. But there are a few limitations as far as, like, you can't control the focus or, and it's harder to, control the light settings and things
right,
like that.
Right.
And so I was wondering, I mean, I'm not rushing into this right at the moment, but maybe in another 6-7 months, if I can keep up my level of picture taking and, I was thinking about getting something where I could have a little more control.
Right.
And I was wondering what you would suggest, especially something, you know, not too complicated, but something that allows me a little more control.
Right.
And maybe also is smaller so I can carry it around.
Right, exactly. Mm. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a real Canon fanatic. One of the reasons that I like a lot of the Canons is that even on the many of the lower-end cameras, they still give you the option to control some of the exposure settings. So they'll have a setting, the TV mode, where you can set where you'll set the shutter speed, and then the camera will set the aperture. There are two exposure controls on a camera. There's the shutter speed and the aperture.
Mm-hmm.
On a lot of the digital cameras, they've kind of combined the shutter and the aperture all in one mechanism. But still, so you can set the shutter speed, and the camera will set the aperture. Now, what's nice about that is if you're shooting action pictures, you can set a higher shutter speed to stop the action.
Right.
Or if you kind of want to show the water rushing down a river, you can set a low shutter speed. Then they'll have an AV mode where you can set the aperture. And that's great for portraits and things where you want the foreground, the person to be in focus, but you want the background to be out of focus.
Right.
So the AV mode is great for that. Or if you're doing a landscape, maybe you want a lot of depth of field all the way through where things in the foreground are in focus and the midground and the background, everything looks in focus. So you can set a small aperture. Or then they might have a manual where you can set both of the shutter speed and the aperture. So,
okay.
And, you know, obviously other cameras have it too. What I always tell people, though, when they're going to go look for a camera, though, and it's great for someone like you because you know what you're looking for. You mm-hmm. can go to the display of the cameras and see, well, what do I need to do to set the shutter speed? What do I need to do to set the aperture? Because all the cameras will go about it in a different way, a different set of menus and commands. So
Correct.
You want to find one for you that you think makes sense. And even though I love Canon, it wouldn't break my heart if you went and bought a Nikon, if the
right.
Nikon made more sense for you, you know. So that's really the key. And as I say, what's nice now is that even in, you know, some of the lower-end cameras, you don't have to spend a whole lot of money. You can get the smaller kind of point-and-shoot variety cameras that still have these exposure control settings.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks very much for the call. I just took a couple pictures in here with these two cameras. I've got this Fuji FinePix,
right.
And I'm shooting in low light here in the studio, indoors and so forth. And they're not near as good as if Brian had taken them. I can guarantee you that. But the Fuji, the 3-megapixel Fuji, did a much better job than the 5-megapixel Canon, just, you know, using the default settings. And I think that has to do, again, with the lens. And what that has to do with, I'm not sure, but it was
well,
fun.
No, that's it. And, you know, the color also brought up something about being able to control the focus.
Yeah.
Right. That is the weakest part, probably. But what you have to do is you have to kind of outsmart the camera. You have to say, well, I know that the... Many of the cameras are going to focus right in the middle. Some of the more advanced cameras have multiple focus points, so they do a really good job. But what you have to do is say, well, I know it's going to focus in the middle, so whatever you want it to, you know, some of them, if you, you know, point it, you can kind of lock in the focus. Some of them do have a manual focus setting, which is great under special circumstances, but it's not that user-friendly kind of on in live situations.
We have several callers waiting. Let's go on and talk with someone in Charleston, line number 4. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been using Nikon film cameras for the last 30 years, and a couple years ago I went the Canon route for a Digital Rebel, and then more recently I bought a Canon S80, and I like both of them, but there's a couple of issues. One is that the Digital Rebel, it's not the XT, it's just the regular one.
Right.
I think that it leaves a lot to be desired in terms of the latitude of exposure, if I'm thinking of the right term.
Right,
it just doesn't cover the span of light and dark that a good color film camera will do.
Excellent point. And actually, you know, that's something that's not unique to the Canon, but digital sensors in general. It's really much more like shooting with slide film than it is shooting with negative film. Yeah.
And so my first, the other issue is that shortly after I got this, and this was about a year and a half ago, I went to a tall ship's sailing in Newport, Rhode Island, and photographed the sailing ships, and it was semi-foggy conditions. And every one of the pictures, and I exposed it, on the automatic.
Right.
And every one of these pictures was way underexposed.
Right.
And I don't know. You know, I was able to, of course, correct that with Photoshop.
Right.
But I was disappointed that it turned out. So my question is, I've got a lot of money invested now in various lenses that go with this. But
right.
I wanted to upgrade to perhaps a better, more recent Canon digital SLR that has better exposure latitude and avoids these kinds of problems I was just talking about.
Sure, you know, and actually, the funny thing is as I say, you know, the digital sensors don't have the latitude that negative film does.
Yeah,
And that's pretty much a feature of all of them, and it is the kind of the post-processing where you're going to save that. So the range from light to dark isn't going to be the same with digital that it was with negative film. So that's going to kind of be with us for the time being until they are able to work on that. The other thing on that foggy day, what I'm suspecting it is there is it's something to do with all cameras, even the film cameras, where they're set up to meter things, assuming it's an average scene where there's a range of light and dark. On a foggy scene like that, where it's mostly all light, I would expect it to come out underexposed because the camera thinks, wow, for, you know, 18% gray or neutral, you know, for an average scene, it's really bright here, so I need to close down. So what you need to do is there's an auto exposure compensation
setting.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. Yeah, okay. So when you're in those kind of those situations where there's a lot of light, like those foggy situations, and when I say light, I don't mean light coming from the sun, but the color, the tone of things is very light. You need to set your auto exposure compensation on +1 If you're in like a snow situation,
go the other way.
No. I would actually set it on plus two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you're in a situation where, let's say, you've got a bunch of coal miners and a, you know, big mounds of coal, then you'd want to go the other way and set it at like minus one.
Okay. But the newer models, like the model 30D or 20D.
Right.
Do they have any better latitude exposure that the Digital Rebel has?
You know, they're all using the same CMOS chip in them, so I think that's going to be the same.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The other thing I want to mention too was that I, in investing some money in some better glass, of course,
yes,
more stuff to tote around. So
right.
I bought this S80, which is really a nice nice camera, but it does have some drawbacks, and I suspect it's because of the sensor size. And that is, for example, that if it's towards dusk and I set it on ISO 400 on the S80, I get much worse quality images compared to the Digital Rebel.
Right, exactly. So it is image size, and then you're also dealing with, you know, where it's a lower light situation. And, you know, the digital cameras, that's something they're still kind of working on, where they do fall apart, you know, in those lower light level situations.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so I'm just going to have to bear with it, especially if I'm staying, you know, since I've got some money invested
in
these lenses with a smaller sensor size. I know the, you know, Canon has this Model 5D, but the lenses I have for my digital camera, Digital Rebel, won't work with that.
No, they'll still work.
Oh, will they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's, you know, that's a big chunk of money to invest.
It is.
We'll see. Thanks very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. We have a couple callers waiting. I'll get right to them. I did want to just follow up on one issue with digital cameras, a feature that is found in many of them, and that's anti-shake or image stabilization, because we also had a question off the air about that, that there are different kinds. There's in-camera, there's in-lens.
Right. I'm going to just add one other quick thing that the caller mentioned.
Oh, sure.
Some of the camera manufacturers are all making digital-only lenses, and so if the caller had some of the digital-only lenses, they might not work with a 5D. The 5D has what's called a full-size image sensor. It's as large as a 35-millimeter piece of film was. If you have a digital-only lens that was designed for the smaller sensor, yes, then they might not work.
Okay.
So that's something to think about. For the anti-shake, there's electronic anti-shake where it does it on the sensor, you know, where it calculates, you know, and eliminates a shake, and then there's a kind that's in the lens. The optical image stabilization is the best way to go. When you do it on the image sensor, you're going to lose some quality and some file size. So I would actually, if you can find one that does optical image stabilization, that's far superior.
Okay.
So.
All right, well, let's leave it at that because we have a couple callers and maybe about 3 minutes remaining. We're next to a Champagne listener, line number one. Good morning.
Hi.
Hello.
We've got a Canon ZR100 mini DV recorder, and we've had it for about a year, and we've taken the tapes. We've never downloaded.
Right, okay.
So I'm trying to figure out what's the most efficient process for actually saving the images. Is it simply just to download them onto a CD, a DVD, or what goes on there?
Sure. You know, if you're going to just take, you know, everything that's on the tape and, you know, you're not going to edit or anything, burning a DVD from it is the way to go. You can get DVD burners now.
Well, yeah, we've got we actually have a DVD recorder
awesome.
That will allow us
right.
to plug it in there.
Exactly. So that's, you know,
that's the best way to go.
That would be the way to go. Now, if your camera has an S video connector on it, I would connect the S video connector to your recorder. Now, the S video connector only does the video part.
Oh.
So you still need to connect in the audio plugs.
Okay.
So usually it's color coded yellow for video, and then
red.
Yeah, and then red and white for the audio.
Okay.
Some also have that S video connector that will give you, it actually does give you a better quality. So you would go the S video connector to the S-Video connector on the DV recorder, but then still the red and the white for the audio.
And still put those in. Okay.
And, yeah, and just burn them right to the DVD.
Okay, that's usually the best way to go. Now, if we did want to do editing, we do have Photoshop. We could just stick that DVD then into the computer.
You know what I would do if I was going to do that? If you just want still images, you might be able to grab it off the DVD. But if you have a FireWire connector on your computer.
No, we don't.
Okay. Well, you can get a FireWire card for $20-$30, I think.
Okay.
You get that. You can go directly from the camera into your computer. And then if you have, you know, you can get Microsoft Movie Maker and I think Adobe Premiere has a light version of it or something.
Okay.
You know, you can, you also need a fairly large hard drive, so
yeah,
be prepared for that. But if you want to edit things, it's not that hard. It's kind of fun, and that way you can condense things down so you don't have
everything,
all those out-of-focus pictures
in the
room.
Okay, great. That's true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. Well, thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Great.
Okay, thanks so much for the call. I'm sorry to say we have a caller waiting, and we're just not going to have time to include them in our conversation. Gee, this sure is fun. So let's have you back again in a short bit. And you know, we talked a little bit about film. I miss film.
You know, film has a lot of advantages, and unfortunately, what's going to happen, I think, is it's going to be harder and harder to get it processed anywhere.
Right.
But you know, as the one caller from Charleston was saying, you know, digital cameras don't have that exposure latitude that negative film did, and that's true.
And there's something about black and white film photography that's just
true,
which I studied under you,
that's
Brian,
right.
Actually.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But one thing that's cool with the digital is you take it into Photoshop, you can make it into black and white from the color really easily.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, Brian Johnson, our guest, professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois. Thanks so much, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely.